yet of whom Maya by the illusory energy Mohita bewildered Diha their intelligence Putra with regard to children Dara wife Griha home Adishu and so on. Unmajanti, they rise to the surface. Imijanti, they become submerged. Vishaktaha, fully entangled. Brijina, of misery. Anave, in the ocean. Translation, their intelligence bewildered by your Maya. Fully attached to children, wife, home, and so on. Persons immersed in the ocean of material misery sometimes rise to the surface and sometimes sink down. Translation responsively. Their intelligence bewildered by your Maya. Fully attached to children, wife, home, and so on. Persons immersed in the ocean of material misery sometimes rise to the surface and sometimes sink down. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami explains that rising in the ocean of misery indicates elevation to the higher species such as demigods, and that being submerged refers to degradation to lower species, even to immobile forms of life such as trees. As stated in the Vayu Purana, Viparyayascha Bhakti Brahmatva Stavarat Vayu, the living being rotates between the position of Brahma and that of an unmoving creature. Srila Jiva Goswami points out that Shiva, having glorified the Lord, now pursues his original intention of securing the Lord's grace for Banasura. Thus, in this and the following four verses, Lord Shiva instructs Bana on his actual position in relation to the Lord. Shiva's appeal to the Lord for compassion towards Bana appears in text 45. Up to this point, Lord Shiva, who has been campaigning for on behalf of Banasura to spare his life and to keep him from being severely punished by Krishna for his great offence. Up until this stage, Lord Shiva has been offering prayers of glorification to Lord Krishna to please the Lord and to reveal that Lord Shiva himself is his devotee, fully aware of Krishna's position and fully aware of his own position as the servant of Krishna, a devoted servant of Krishna. And at the same time, he has been revealing to Banasura the glories of Krishna. Banasura, of course, was completely in illusion, completely bewildered as to who Krishna was, and completely bewildered as to who he was. He had an overestimated an overestimated understanding of who he was, right? There's another word there somewhere. So, Lord Shiva has pointed this out, first indicated Krishna's position, and now he's almost preaching to Banasura his position. And so this sort of verse refers to people of the Banasura mentality that the devotees, they understand Krishna's position, they understand his activities, they understand that he's unlimited. Although he appears like a cowherd boy, very beautiful form, two arms, two legs, playing the flute, and appears like an ordinary boy, yet everything about Krishna is unlimited. His form, his pastimes, his opulences, everything is unlimited. But only devotees understand that. Only devotees, can accommodate that Krishna can be in a personal form, appearing this very, huggable sort of feature. And at the same time, he is unlimited. A devotee can appreciate that. Others are totally bewildered, and they are covered by ignorance. And that covering of ignorance means that they have no understanding of Krishna's position. They have no understanding of the spiritual world. They have no understanding. What to speak of understanding Krishna's position? They don't even know their own position. They don't even know their own spiritual nature. Banasura, he's thinking, I'm this great thousand-armed, mighty thrashing machine. He's not thinking, I am a little spirit soul, tiny, one ten-thousandth the size of the tip of a hair. He's thinking, he's this gigantic, huge, 1,000 mighty-armed creature that can destroy everything. He has no understanding of even who he is. What to speak, if he can't even understand his own tiny, limited little spiritual nature, where's the question of understanding Krishna's nature? So, completely bewildered. The bewilderment of Maya, Krishna's illusory potency, it doesn't end there, that you're just a little foolish. You get everything that goes with it. So, which is, as it's described here, when one becomes attached to one's own body, right, thinking, I am this body, then one becomes attached to everything related to the body. So, anything that gives the body pleasure, wife, husband, children, home, all the comforts like that. So one becomes very, very much attached to those because they give, one is attached to one's body, one is attached to everything that is in relationship to one's body. And the problem there is that even though one is attached to all those things that we believe, because there is the conception that I am this powerful master of my destiny. I am this great independent enjoyer. And all these things that I have surrounded myself with in relationship to the body, I will enjoy immensely. That is the illusion. But we become so fixed in that concept that we don't see what's actually happening, is that we're suffering. we're in a miserable, miserable condition, but we're just so convinced, so much an illusion. I am this great enjoyer, just this independent enjoyer, like that. That's what we're thinking, and we're thinking it so much, and we're so absorbed in that illusion that despite the fact that there's so much suffering, we're still thinking, yes, I am enjoying it so much. And it is the last thing that we want to conceive, that, you know, I'm not enjoying, because that's our whole concept of who we are. I am the enjoyer. So therefore we just block it out. Any suffering, any problems, no, it just doesn't exist. I am not suffering. This is actually all part of my enjoyment. Or I'm actually working up to enjoying. You may think I'm suffering now, but I have a 5-year plan. And in 5 years' time, you will see that I will be enjoying. And, you know, of course, 5 years down the track, right, had a couple of mishaps, but I'm a fighter, you know, I'm a battler, you know, I'll push on. You get to the end of the life, you know, nothing happened, right? the great, you know, I will be this...
Euphoria.
What's that?
Euphoria.
Yes, yeah, it all, you know, and then... you know, gradually, in order to cope, we sink into different types of, you know, madness to, you know, help us get through the day. So basically, you know, actually one time they challenged the Hare Krishna movement when Srila Prabhupada was here, that, you know, you're joining the Hare Krishna movement, you're crazy. You are crazy people. Okay. And they really thought that. They weren't just sort of trying to call names or something. They actually thought, these guys are crazy. You know, it's like, they're just... So Srila Prabhupada, he answered that. Who's actually crazy? And, you know, so he said, well, let's look at it with reason. You say we're crazy, we say you're crazy. Let's have a look at it with reason now and see who really is crazy. According to us, according to Srila Prabhupada, they're crazy. Because anyone who thinks they're something they're not is crazy. Right? Isn't that the definition of crazy? If you think you're something and you're not that thing, you're crazy. If you really believe it. Anyone who thinks they're this material body, they're crazy. If you ask anyone, oh, who are you? I am Mr. So-and-so. I am Mrs. So-and-so. You know, I am the father of these children. I am the mother of these. I am so-and-so's cousin. And, you know, and I work in such and such an office. I was born in such and such a country. So you ask anyone, any common person, and they will just give you a whole description of who they are, totally bewildered, and they really believe that they are that body. That's just the, you know, they believe it 100%. So much so that you can't convince them that they're not that body. You can, you know, show them all the books and all the philosophy. You can't, you know, snap them out of there. Sunk. They're really crazy. So, and, you know, All the different crazinesses that go along with that. That, you know, this is mine. So, you know, they claim, like the Australians, we claim this country, this is our country. You know, and the Americans say, yeah, this is our country. But before any American ever went there, before any Australian ever came to this country, the country was already here. It was there before any Australian. How can any Australian come to something that's already there and say it's mine? You know, that's if we just walk into someone's house and say that's mine. Actually, my brother did that. My brother actually did. He suffered from mental disorders, and one stage when he was very, very ill. And we can laugh about it now, but. He actually just went for a drive, and he just pulled into someone's house and just, you know, went in and made himself some toast and, you know, some something to eat, and you know, lay down, have a sleep, and you know, like that. And, you know, it's just took it as easy, you know, this is mine. And then when he thoroughly enjoyed there, you know, watched a bit of television, no one was home, thank goodness. And he just went off to the next place and just said, you know, had a bite to eat, and, you know, just the same. Because the people come home and saw him there. What are you doing? Oh, this is my house. So, because they understood that, you know, he was crazy, you know, he lost it. And so, you know, they kindly called the police, and gradually, you know, we tracked him down and found him. But, you know, that is so, but people do that. We do, you know, we come into this world with nothing, we leave with nothing, and while we're all here, we just claim, that's mine, and that's mine. You come near it and I'll kill you. Like that, you know. So, you know, there's so much craziness. No one has any conception that anything could possibly belong to God. You know, that doesn't even enter into the considerations. Or even if it does belong to God, they're still claiming, even people who understand, well, yes, everything is created by God, but still, it's mine. God give it to me. You know, taking it off me. Like that. So, you know, people don't understand that they are the spirit soul within the body. They are not the body. And Krishna gives the example in the Bhagavad Gita how we can understand that we're not the body. He says, Dihinasmin yatada he komanam yoram jira tatada antara prapti yatirastatranamuite. That as the embodied soul, you know, passes through this body from little baby's body to, you know, child to adolescent to, you know, adult, then similarly at the time of death, the soul passes into another body. So Krishna gives intelligence how we can understand that we're not this body. I was actually explaining that point to my father the other day. I've actually been trying for nearly 30 years to explain to him that he's not that body. And he finally got it. It took 30 years, but he finally got it. And I was really surprised. I'd actually even given him the same example. But anyway, he was telling me about evolution and what have you. And I said, you know, you don't believe all that stuff, do you? Still, you know. You know they teach stuff to children and then they realise that what they're teaching is wrong, but they don't change the books. They still keep teaching it, even though they've admitted, oh, you know, this is wrong. And you can go 5 years down the track and they're still teaching things which they've admitted is not true. Anyway, you know, I said to him that, you know, that little body that you had when you were a little baby, that is gone. All the chemicals, all the cells in that body, they're gone. Now, if your consciousness, if your identity was produced as a combination of those chemicals and a combination of those, you know, material ingredients, then when that body left, that identity, that consciousness should have gone with it. But you're still the same person in a totally different body, which means that you haven't changed. Your consciousness could not be a product of the mixing of those material elements because they're all gone. And yet you're still here. And he understood. It's a fact. And I said, have you got any comeback? Because he usually does. Is there anything you want to challenge that? He said, no. He said, no. No. So now the last few days he's calling me a holy man. He said, oh, he's my son, you know. He's finally understood that there actually is spirit. So now he thinks, oh, you know, he's actually into something spiritual here, you know, after he's finally the penny dropped. But, you know, generally people don't understand that. And what's more, if they somehow understand that, all right, the consciousness, the living force is not part of the material body. It is something which is transcendental to the material body. But when the body dies, then everything becomes void. Everything becomes impersonal. Right? So then they're, you know, so they've risen a little bit out of mire, but they drag that mire in, you know, still further into philosophy. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that this body is like a machine, that's understood, and we're a passenger within the machine. We say arm, you know, scratch my head, so the arm does that. So we're a passenger. We make the body move as it wills. When we move to another body, we go into another vehicle like that. So similarly, if we're driving a car, you know, we have discrimination, we have personality. We may be sitting in a car, and when the lights go red, we use our discrimination, our intelligence, and we stop. And when they go green, we go. We talk to the people next to us and, you know, what have you. When we get out of the car, we don't just all of a sudden become a void. And we don't lose our personality. You know, we get out of the car as our arm starts going out, it starts disappearing. You know, or we get out of the car and we have no more sense of discrimination. You know, we don't know what to do. There's no more intelligence. There's no more personality. So we just sort of stand there. As soon as we leave the car, we're just some, you know, impersonal or void existence. It doesn't work, you know. So the same, when the soul comes out of this body, why would it become impersonal? Why would it become void? There's no reason for it. It's personal within the body, and that has not changed despite any material conditions. And the final change of death, the soul keeps, you know, travelling on. So, you know, this is the consciousness of spiritual understanding, the beginnings of spiritual understanding, that I'm not this body, I am a spirit soul. So Lord Shiva is instructing Banasura, you know, in this sort of understanding, you know, trying to bring him out of illusion, because Banasura is trying to help, Lord Shiva is trying to help Banasura to revive his relationship with Krishna. So in order to do that, the first thing you've got to do is smash through the illusion. Right? You can't help someone revive their spiritual identity with the supreme spiritual identity if they're, you know, just completely covered by illusion. You have to somehow break through that illusion. You're not this body. You have to cut through it with the machete of transcendental knowledge. You are not this body. You are not a void. You are not an imperson like this. Chop, chop, chop. And when you chop down that forest of illusion, and then they can see clearly, oh yes, I understand. But then what do I do? What are my spiritual activities? So those spiritual activities Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, in the ninth chapter actually, in the last verse, he describes. He says, always think of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances to me, offer your worship to me. Like this. Yeah. So, in these activities, actually, Lord Krishna gives the whole gamut of Krishna consciousness. Internally Krishna conscious, externally engaged in Krishna consciousness, with devotion and respect. That is that verse in a nutshell. Always think of me. We're always internally Krishna conscious. And worship me. We're always engaged in Krishna consciousness externally. And be my devotee with devotion, offer obeisances with respect. So always think of Krishna. generally, someone who is material absorbed, they're always absorbed in their body and, you know, material, those things were attached. That's all illusion. So Krishna is saying, stop thinking about things, you know, which are full of illusion. Think of me, because I am the absolute truth. Absorb yourself in thinking of Krishna. Of course, in order to think of Krishna, we have to, you know, approach the spiritual master who can, you know, give us some understanding that Krishna is Satchidananda Vigraha. He is his spiritual form is full of bliss, full of knowledge, fully conscious, eternal, like that. And it is not a material body, and all his activities are unlimited, enacted on the transcendental platform. So Krishna is saying, think of me in the proper way, not that one should. And then he says, be my devotee. In other words, we should be Krishna conscious in a favourable way, not like the Kamsas. You know, Kamsa, he was thinking of Krishna, but in an unfavourable way. So Krishna is saying, think of me, but be my devotee, be devoted, be loving. Don't think of me, you know, that, you know, like people, they read the Bhagavad Gita and they say, yeah, Krishna is speaking, but he doesn't really exist. He's just a, you know, a material, a feature of the material energy, but there's no Krishna in this, you know, he's not really a person, he's not a spiritual person. So Krishna is saying, don't think of me like that, in this way, always trying to kill me, always trying to make me not exist. That's how Kamsa's thinking. How can I make God not exist? And people read the Bhagavad Gita. How can I take Krishna out of the Bhagavad Gita? How can I kill him and chop him up and make him an impersonal? As the Kamsa's way. So Krishna is saying, think of me, but don't think like that. Think as a devotee. Be devoted. Be loving. And you know, that love, Krishna says, in order to love him, is patram pushpam palam payam. You know, you offer me a fruit, flower, water, a leaf, I will accept it. Because there are six principal ways that we reciprocate love with a person. We can offer them food, and they will accept that food, and they will offer us food, and we will accept it. These are exchanges of love. And they will speak some, you know, intimate conversation, and you will hear, and then there will be some return. So there's some confidential discussions, and there is offering of gifts. Here is a gift, like that. So these are, when you offer like that, so Krishna says, if you offer me these things, I will accept it. So Krishna is accepting it, is his you know, reciprocation of love, and he reciprocates in many other ways. So this you know, but of course we understand Krishna doesn't need a leaf, and you know, it's not as if he is lacking flowers in the spiritual world, or that he is going hungry. And unless we bring him food, he will die. You know, he wants us to act as if he were hungry. But we understand that God doesn't actually, you know, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's complete, he's full. So what is he asking for? He wants our love. And he is saying that love can be offered by anyone. This is universal. You know, there is no one on this planet who can say, well, you know, there's not a leaf, there's no water, there's no flowers, and you know, there's nothing. None of those things exist where I am. You know, so sorry, I couldn't offer you any devotional service today. Actually, everywhere, you know, people can't exist for more than a couple of days without, you know, some water. So there must be a few drops of water somewhere that you can offer to Krishna. Krishna will accept it. If that's all you have, Krishna is so kind. If you can offer him a drop of water with love, he will accept it. But of course we shouldn't cheat thinking, you know, the idea is he wants our love, which means if you to offer love means you give him the best. Not that, you know, we have so much you know, for ourselves, and we offer Krishna, you know, well, here's a couple of leaves I found on the road, you know, for you. So we can't cheat Krishna, but he wants our love. But the fact is that, you know, whatever we're offering is already his anyway. You know, when we offer a fruit or, you know, anything, we build a big temple, it's already his. All the materials, everything, you know, everything is his. It is already his. So it is just like a father. You know, a father gives an allowance to the children. We have Father's Day coming up. So a father gives an allowance to the children, and the children go out and spend the money and bring it back and buy their father or the mother, you know, a gift. And the father accepts that gift. Oh, you know. Because there's an exchange of love. They're very, very happy. But otherwise, without understanding the reciprocation, it doesn't make sense. Why would you give your money, you know, to someone else who then gives it back, and you think, oh, you've given me that. You know damn well that you actually gave them that money. You know, it doesn't make sense. It only makes sense if you understand that the Father is enjoying the reciprocation of love, and the mother, and the child is enjoying the reciprocation. The child is enjoying just as much, you know, here, you know, like that. And it's exactly the same. If we don't understand that reciprocation of love, we can't, you know, people cannot understand. Why are you offering to God? He's already God. Everything is his, you know. Why give him anything? He's already got everything. You know, so they don't understand. It's that reciprocation of love. And by offering in this way, you know, by you know, if we see something, we think, oh, that can be offered to Krishna. When we offer something to Krishna, so we offer a fruit, some flowers, some food, some water, it remains where it is. Right? So we offer a nice plate, and then we take the remnants. So in that way, you can actually spiritualize the whole world. Everything remains the same. It's just a change in consciousness. With the same principle of seeing everything through the eyes of love and offering to Krishna, the entire world can be completely spiritualized. Nothing has to really change. It just stays where it is. We stay where we are, the world stays where it is, like that, and we just offer it with love. And by doing that, we become the Supreme Personality of Godhead, becomes our friend and our protector. So just by that little offering, so for that person, just like all the devotees, you know, in this temple, always offering to Krishna, so you can guarantee, you know, Krishna is accepting that, and Krishna loves all the devotees in this temple. Therefore, what do they have to worry? They'll be protected, there won't be insufficiency, they'll be purified, they'll go back to Godhead. Just by that offering, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes your, you know, personally looking after you. What more do you need in this world? Everything is there. There is no higher goal to be looking for. You don't need to search for any other protector, any other, you know, source of strength or opulence. Just that little offering that we do each day. We may come, whatever we can do. We may come and chant before the deities, we may chant before Srila Prabhupada, we may hear Srimad Bhagavatam, we may, you know, put some garlands together, we may sell some books, you know. Anything, anything. And it all, and by that simple act, Krishna becomes the lover of his devotee. So we think of Krishna, we become Krishna's devotee, we offer respects to Krishna. Obeisances, just like someone's offering obeisances now. I didn't mean it literally. But we offer obeisances, that means to obey. You know, so the love is there, but we also the respect, and we obey Krishna. And always engaged in worship, you know, in so many different ways. So it's not just there is some internal sentiment, oh yes, I love God, but today all my time is taken up with my family and my body. and tomorrow the same, and the next day the same. I heard. So I love Krishna, but I have no time. I won't be given anything to Krishna this week. So Krishna is saying, yes, be my devotee, but offer me worship. Do something. Right? Don't just be this airy-fairy nonsense lip service. Yes, I love God. Like, you know, so many religions are teaching, I love God, but I'm just going to do anything I want. No, he says, offer obeisances, which means be obedient. You can't do anything you want. Love me, and if you love me, be obedient. Don't break the laws of God. And if you love me, be obedient and do something about it. And the best thing that we can do is preach Krishna consciousness. The best thing we can do, there are so many people out there who are just absorbed in illusion. So we have to get our weapons and, you know, our cannonballs, the gulab jamuns, and, all our different weapons. We have samosas, you know. You know, and books, you know, the books are like time bombs, you know, that you set the charge, you put them in someone's house, and one day they just go off, boom. It's like, you know, they're just sitting there for some time, and one day that person just feels, you know, I need to reach out to God, and that book will fall in their hand. I look, this book's been in my house all these years, you know. So these are our weapons. So we go out with our weapons and we preach Krishna consciousness and we smash that illusion to pieces. But of course we cannot do that unless we first get out of illusion ourselves. So, you know, Lord Shiva, he is helping Banasura to, you know, get out of this illusion where he's just simply suffering, and he's saying, you know, come to spiritual life where everything is blissful. I'll leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments about that. Sorry. Anyone satisfied? Hare Krishna.